You're listening to Voice Actor Showcase, episode number 4. Hi everyone, and welcome back to Voice Actor Showcase, a podcast about voice actors and their stories. I'm Jun Yoon. Welcome to episode 4. First and foremost, I'd like to invite you to connect with us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Find us at Voice Actor Show. The Voice Actor Showcase is about voice actors on their journey to realize the dream of becoming an established voice actor. We're interested in telling the stories of countless voice actors around the world who are working hard to make their dream a reality. Whether that means they've just upgraded to an XLR microphone from the USB type, or has booked their very first four-figure job just yesterday. Now, as always, I like to mention that the voice actors being featured on this podcast are paid for their work. It's only $50 for payment, and I sincerely apologize. I don't mean to discount your voice work, it's just what I can afford at this very moment. However, I promise to increase the pay for the voice actor's time and effort as my earning potential gets bigger and bigger. I promise. Also, as Gandhi once said, a 50 is a 50. Now, if you have an interesting story to tell, and you have not been featured in Talking Tunes with Rob Paulson yet, I'd love to have you on the show. Please contact us by visiting voiceactorshowcase.com. Today, we'll meet a voice actor from Jacksonville, Florida. His love of animation and films has eventually led him to the voiceover industry, and he runs a successful full-time voiceover business from his home studio. Like many of our stories, his is one of starting from scratch and rising up to the successful business that it is now through hard work, determination, and dedication. We'll talk about his journey and how it all came to be where it is today. Please welcome Iggy Kidd.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles Review by Roger Ebert. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is founded on the essential natures of its actors. It is perfectly cast and soundly constructed, and all else flows naturally. Steve Martin and John Candy don't play characters. They embody themselves. That's why the comedy, which begins securely planted in the twin genres of the road movie and the buddy picture, is able to reveal so much heart and truth. Some movies are obviously great. Others gradually thrust their greatness upon us. When Planes, Trains, and Automobiles was released in 1987, I enjoyed it immensely, gave it a favorable review, and moved on. But the movie continued to live in my memory. Like certain other popular entertainments, It's a Wonderful Life, E.T. the Extraterrestrial, Casablanca, it not only contained a universal theme, but also matched it with the right actors and story, so that it shrugged off the other movies of its kind, and stood above them, in a kind of perfection. This is the only movie our family watches as a custom, most every Thanksgiving. The story is familiar. Steve Martin plays Neil, a Chicago advertising man, sleek in impeccable blues and grays, smooth-shaven, recently barbered, reeking of self-confidence, prosperity, and anal retentiveness. John Candy plays Dell, a traveling salesman from Chicago who sells shower curtain rings, the best in the world. He is very tall, very large, and covered in layers of mismatched shirts, sweaters, vests, sport coats, and parkas. His bristly little mustache looks like it was stuck on crooked just before his entrance. His bow tie is also askew. Both of these men are in Manhattan 2 days before Thanksgiving, and both want to get home for the holidays. Fate joins their destinies. Together, they will endure every indignity that modern travel can inflict on its victims. What will torture them even more is being trapped in each other's company. Dell wants only to please. Neil wants only to be left alone. John Hughes, who wrote, directed, and produced the film, is one of the most prolific filmmakers of the last 25 years. He is not often cited for greatness, although some of his titles, like The Breakfast Club, Weird Science, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and Home Alone, have fervent admirers. What can be said for him is that he usually produces a real story about people he has clear ideas about. His many teenage comedies, for example, are miles more inventive than the recent sex and prom sagas. The buried story engine of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is not slowly growing friendship or odd couple hostility, devices a lesser film might have employed, but empathy. It is about understanding how the other guy feels. Dell, we feel, was born with empathy, he instinctively identifies with Neil's problems. He is genuinely sorry to learn he stole his cab. He is quick to offer help when their flight is diverted to Wichita, Kansas, and there are no hotel rooms available. Neil, on the other hand, depends on his credit cards and self-reliance. He wants to make his own plans, book his own room, rent his own car. He spends the movie trying to peel off from Del, and failing. Del spends the movie having his feelings hurt, and then coming through for Neil anyway. The movie could have been a shouting match like the unfortunate The Odd Couple 2, 1998. Hughes is more subtle. The key early scene takes place in the Wichita motel room they have to share. When Neil explodes, telling Del his jokes stink, his stories are not interesting, and he would rather sit through an insurance seminar than listen to any more of the fat man's pointless anecdotes. Look at Candy's face fall. He shows Del as a man hurt and saddened, and not for the first time. Later, he remembers how the most important person in his life once told him he was too eager to please, and shouldn't always try so hard. At this point, Del wins our hearts, and the movie is set up as more than a comedy. But a comedy it is. Not one movie a year contributes a catchphrase to the language. We remember Jack Nicholson ordering the toast. If you build it, they will come. E.T., phone home. I'm walking here. I love the smell of napalm in the morning. You talking to me? And we remember the scene where Del and Neil wake up cuddled together in the cramped motel bed. And Neil asks Del where his hand is. And Del said it's between some pillows. And Neil says, those aren't pillows. And the two men bolt out of bed in terror. And Neil shouts, you see that Bears game last week? And Del cries, what a game! What a game! Bears gonna go all the way! This is not homophobia, but the natural reaction of two men raised to be shy and distant around other men. To fear misunderstood intimacy. Slight break in the text here. These are the words of Roger Ebert and not myself. My personal opinion on that scene differs slightly, but keep that in mind. This is the direct text. The other great comic set piece in the movie is responsible for its R rating. Nothing else in the movie would qualify for other than PG-13. This is Neil's verbal symphony for the F word, performed by the desperate man after a rental car bus strands him 3 miles from the terminal without a car. He has to walk back through the snow and mud, crossing runways, falling down embankments, until he finally faces a chirpy rental agent, Edie McClurg, who is chatting on the phone about the need for tiny marshmallows in the ambrosia. When she sweetly asks Neil if he is disturbed, he unleashes a speech in which the adjectival form of the F-word supplies the prelude to every noun, including itself, and is additionally used as punctuation. When he finishes, the clerk has a two-word answer that supplies one of the great moments in movie dialogue. Neil is uneasy around ordinary people, and in unstructured situations. His mind is organized, like a daytimer. He's lived in a cocoon of affluence and lacks a common touch. Consider the scene on the bus where Del suggests a sing-along, and Neil, awkwardly trying to be a good sport, begins Three Coins in a Fountain, and doesn't know the words. His fellow passengers look at him like he's crazy. Del saves the moment with a boisterous rendition of a song everybody except Neil knows. Meet the Flintstones. The last scenes of the movie carry the emotional payoff we have been half awaiting all along. For Neil, they reflect a kind of moral rebirth, such as Scrooge experiences in another great holiday tale. He has learned his lesson, and will no longer judge people by their appearances, or by his own selfish standards. There is true poignancy in the scene where Neil finds Del waiting alone on the L platform. One night, a few years after Planes, Trains, and Automobiles was released, I came upon John Candy sitting all by himself in a hotel bar in New York, smoking and drinking, and we talked for a while. We were going to be on the same TV show the next day. He was depressed. People loved him, but he didn't seem to know that. Or it wasn't enough. He was a sweet guy, and nobody had a word to say against him, but he was down on himself. All he wanted to do was make people laugh, but sometimes he tried too hard, and he hated himself for doing that in some of his movies. I thought of Del, There is so much truth in the role that it transforms the whole movie. Hughes knew it, and captured it again in Only the Lonely, 1991. And Steve Martin knew it, and played straight to it. The movies that last, the ones we return to, don't always have lofty themes or Byzantine complexities. Sometimes, they last because they are arrows straight to the heart. When Neil unleashes that tirade in the motel room, and Del's face saddens, he says, "Oh, I see." It is a moment that not only defines Del's life, but is a turning point in Neil's, because he also is a lonely soul, and too well organized to know it. Strange how much poignancy creeps into this comedy, and only becomes stronger while we're laughing.
All right, Iggy Kid, hello, and welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be here.
Why don't we start with some basic information. How old are you? Are you single, married, kids, so on and so forth? Where are you? How many siblings? How many dogs? So on and so forth.
I am currently 27. I'm going to be 28 in March. I live in southern Georgia, just in the Jacksonville area, so like right on the border. I live with my partner, Coco, here in Georgia, and we have a roommate, we have two cats and a dog, and I have six siblings, three half-siblings,
wow.
Three full-siblings.
Big family, that's awesome.
Yeah.
It's not awesome. I don't know.
It's better now that we're all adults.
Yeah, I get that. I'm a single child, so I have no context of that, unfortunately.
It can be rough at times, especially during our teenage years. That was a lot of egos brushing up against each other. But now we've all kind of calmed down with maturity.
I guess that's what I have to look forward to. I have two boys, and it's already starting. And I don't know.
it's interesting. My three half-siblings, I ended up doing quite a bit to help raise them, just because with that many kids, the older kids are generally expected to help out and all that. So while I don't have any kids of my own, I have at least some experience caring for kids. And yeah, it's difficult, as I'm sure you know.
Quite so. Yes, indeed. He's always fighting. I don't know why. Anyway, let's move on. Iggy Kid, really cool name. Real name?
No, it's a stage name. It's just, it's easier to spell than my actual birth name, which is Isaac Henneman. Nobody spells Isaac correctly, so I went with that. It was based on a series I was planning on doing. It was going to be a cooking show on YouTube, more or less a parody of The French Chef with Julia Child. It was going to be
cool.
The Broke Cook with Iggy Kid. So I kept it. It's catchy enough, and enough people seem to like it that I just stuck with it.
Yeah, I understand the struggle. I have Starbucks names, like, at different locations. I go by John and Sam and Jack, because nobody can spell June right for some reason. I don't know. They always go, huh?
I worked at Starbucks, specifically I worked at the Starbucks one over from the original Starbucks in Seattle, and so we got names from all over the world. We'd have hundreds of people every day, but then the joke names and stuff. There was one guy who would come in, and he seemed like such a brusque dude that, like, didn't really want to interact, but oddly enough, he always had his name be Sleepyhead. Yeah, generally they're not going to care as long as it's something recognizable that is not going to get mixed up with somebody else.
There you go. The tip here is to give unique yet normal names. That's perfect.
Honestly, that's how it is with stage names for the most part, too. You want something that is unique but not so wacky that people recognize that it's a fake name.
Right.
Which I'm about 50-50. A lot of people recognize that it's not my actual name, but enough people find it unique enough and memorable enough that they don't mind.
And that's a step forward, isn't it? To be recognizable, to stand out from the crowd of all the Sam Smiths or whatever their regular names are. That's a great choice, I think. Something for new voice actors to consider, perhaps, as they start their journey.
It can be helpful. I mean, you look at people like Mark Elliott, who people mostly know as the coming soon to Disney DVD, like that guy from those promos. He originally started in radio as, I think, John Frick, but when radio at that time, you couldn't say Frick on the radio. So they had to change his name. And apparently in radio, it's really common to just have your name adjusted for the DJ position. So over time, he's had a few, and it all kind of settled down into Mark Elliott.
Well, I didn't know that. Learn something new every day. All right, let's go into the whole voice aspect then. Let's start from the beginning. Tell us about the moment when you realized that animation and films was your thing.
I'm not sure if there's specifically one moment. I grew up watching a lot of pretty interesting films and animations. My dad is into really, like, you know, artsy films and, like, more indie films and stuff. So we were watching stuff like Fantastic Planet and The Point and, like, Last Unicorn when I was growing up. But then there was also stuff like Thief and the Cobbler, which is unfortunately just got shoved off as not, like, the big thing that it wanted to be. But that was one of the best animated pieces. Like, if you watch that, there are parts that have 100 frames per second traditionally animated.
Wow.
Like, getting that influence really, really helped. But then there was stuff like, according to my dad, like, when I was 3, my favorite movie was Naked Lunch. And I grew up with stuff like Hellraiser and, like, Nightmare on Elm Street. So I had a very, very wide set of films that I saw. And I think the one that really made me realize that it's people who work on these was Nightmare Before Christmas. I remember watching that and watching behind-the-scenes featurettes on TV and just realizing, like, all of the work that went into these little models, all of the work that went into the stop-motion animating and everything, and that's what really made me realize that it's something that you can do.
Throughout your childhood, you had really supportive parents, right? Which is something not everybody's really blessed with. Having that support through your parents, friends, relatives, whatever it may be, could be a really beneficial aspect that could really support you in your creative endeavor. Tell me about your experience in terms of receiving that support and maybe a piece of advice on how to deal with unsupportive friends and family. And how they can rise above that, perhaps, if you're a new voice actor.
The thing is, I didn't really get into voiceover until after I'd moved out of my parents' place. So it was just support in other aspects, because I've always been writing or drawing or doing something creative. And while there have been varying levels of support, varying ways that they show their support, at the very least, my parents have never rejected an idea for me to pursue something. If there's something that I am clearly passionate about or something that I really want to do, they always will, you know, help out where they can. If it's something they're familiar with, like my dad, he is a guitarist. He's a fantastic guitarist. And if I'm talking about music or audio production, because he's made his own albums and stuff, he will help out there. But then if it's something like voiceover, where there's the audio production side, but then there's the performance side, that the acting side that he's not as familiar with, he's definitely still cool with it and he's happy helping me with it, but then he will be realistic about it. He will point out that there are difficulties trying to do it as a career and that it is an incredibly difficult thing to get into. So he's supportive, but he's realistic about it. And then the second part of your question, the advice for anyone who doesn't have a supportive parent or supportive people in their life, I would say regardless of the support is definitely helpful, and I greatly appreciate the support I've gotten. But in the end, whether you have support or not, it comes down to you, and it comes down to the work you're willing to put into it. It really comes down to whatever you want to do. If you don't have a physical or mental disability stopping you, you can do whatever you want as long as you're willing to put in the work. And it can be grueling, it can be really tiring, but if you're willing to put in the work and put in the time to study and practice and work at it and find the people who can help you out and show you what to do and find all of the books from people who have already gone through it that you can find out about their experiences and the techniques and the best practices and everything, you can do it, whatever it is. You can become proficient at pretty much anything.
When I started, like, I jumped in. At the same time, I was careful. You know what I mean? I didn't want to just go out there and start doing whatever. I did my due diligence in doing my research. What are some of the really helpful resources that you found that were super helpful and useful to getting you started?
It's definitely a good question. It's important to be critical when looking at any advice on voiceover, really anything nowadays. I go on the voice acting subreddit all the time, and I see a lot of people giving kind of terrible advice, and a big part of it is they just don't realize how it is. My biggest pet peeve currently are the PVC moving blanket booths. They don't work, guys. 100% do not work. Every time I see one, I'm like, show me audio. And the like 10% of the time that they do, it sounds like there's nothing there. It doesn't work at all. It doesn't block any noise out. It doesn't hold any noise in. They don't work. You need mass to hold sound in and keep sound out. A blanket is not enough mass. As far as good resources, Talkin' Tunes with Rob Paulson, that's not so much technique and stuff, but that is definitely teaches you a lot about acting and different people's journeys and how acting worked for them. Voiceover Voice Actor by Yuri Lowenthal and Tara Platt is a fantastic starting book. It teaches you a lot of the basics. Gosh, there was this great series. You can't find it anymore, and I'm upset because I paid for it. It was Lee Tokar, who's a Canadian voice actor. He did this series called Voiceover or Voice Acting Essentials, I think it was called. If someone can track that down, let me know, because I had it on a hard drive that accidentally got wiped, and I can't. They don't have it anymore. I've contacted them, and they just don't respond to me on this site. But if anybody has that course, like, I paid for it, I'd like to watch it again. But that was a pretty good, that was good. It had a great thing about this whole wheel, this like interlocking wheel of how to do a character breakdown that was really interesting. As for stuff that you could more easily find, gosh, there's so many resources out there. YouTube, look, go to Booth Junkie to see stuff on audio production specifically, and especially sound treatment. Like, if you want to get a booth that actually sounds nice, Booth Junkie is a good place to start. He has a lot of different options that can go from affordable to, you know, extravagant. Bill DeWeese is a bit controversial, and I will admit a lot of his stuff is just kind of advertising for his courses and things.
Right.
But he does have good advice as far as narration and commercial voiceover goes. So take his stuff with a grain of salt, but there's definitely good info in there. I Want to Be a Voice Actor.com, run by Dee Bradley Baker,
right,
who is a fantastic voice actor. That's a ton of great information. The thing I find that most is that a lot of these resources are going to be about the technique and the practice of voiceover.
Mm.
What's important, and it's more difficult to find for voiceover specifically, is the business side of voiceover.
Right.
And I'd say for that, just look up business books in general, self-marketing, client acquisition, selling. Like, you kind of just have to find those independent and retrofit them to voiceover. I did so much research before I even did any real voice acting. So
now, in addition to everything that you already do, you're also a demo producer. If you don't mind sharing, what exactly is the process of creating a demo, and how does it help a voice actor, or how do you help the voice actor bring out his or her best performance?
Ideally, I will write the script for them, which that's a whole system of just communicating with them to figure out what it is that they like, what will work with the way their voice sounds, the way that they act, you know, things that they specifically like and things that they are particularly good at to play to their strengths,
mm-hmm.
but also their wants, like what kind of jobs do they want? Because it's good to make sure that they have something they can actually market with. In the end, a voiceover demo is just a audio business card. It's showing your strengths and it's showing who you are so that you can get work. So I will write the script, and then ideally I will direct them. I will get in a Discord or a Skype call and have them record locally and direct them so that there's at least a 1 second set of ears that can hear any oddities or weird things that they're doing. And that's a whole other skill unto itself.
Right.
Not just being able to notice the weird things, but also kind of putting your ego aside as an actor and recognizing that other people will have their own instincts. Often they'll do something that I would never do with a line. And if I was too focused on myself and my ego, I'd try and give them a line read. But in reality, I usually focus and think, like, is that actually better? Does that actually work? And generally, yeah. Generally, they come up with a more interesting read than I would have given them, and one that fits themselves a lot better.
Huh.
And then, you know, they'll send me the files, and I'll do all of the editing, all of the processing. That's the bulk of the work, is just editing, processing, you know, mixing it with the music and the sound effects. If there are music and sound effects, sometimes
right.
I'll leave it dry to really put the focus on their voice. But yeah, it's I do everything I can to help them.
Let's talk about your work. Over the years, you've performed a lot of different parts in various platforms for various clients, large and small. What are some memorable performances and characters that come to mind that you're proud of, perhaps?
Gosh, there's so many that are formative to where I am now as a voice actor that never got released, which it's an unfortunate reality of this profession, especially with all of these online roles, which is that I've been cast for a ton of things that never get finished.
Mm.
And I could go through a whole list. The big one to me is one that I'm not going to name because it was never finished. But when I first was really getting into voiceover, there was this project that was going to be a My Little Pony fan film, a whole animated film, feature length. In fact, it was going to be like 3 hours originally.
Wow.
Which was incredibly unrealistic, I understand now. But I was like still fresh to the whole thing, and I was just full of confidence and optimism. And I was like, yeah, this is going to be great. I'm going to be part of this movie. It's going to be a ton of fun. And for 3 years that I was a part of this, and it had gone on for 3 years before that, I was so invested in this character, and I practiced a ton, and I wrote scenes for him. I did so much prep work, but it just kept dragging on, and we didn't get anything to do. I found out after finally digging into it and being a part of the group for so long that I was able to suss it out. We didn't have a script.
Oh my gosh.
It wasn't until like 2 years that I was into it, so 5 years into the entire production, that I finally realized we had no script at all. And then I got on the director's back about it and I was like, we have to have a script. If we don't, what are we going to, there's nothing to do. If there's no script, there's no movie.
Yeah.
And so I got on him about it. And after like months, he wrote like one scene. It was incredibly rough.
Oh.
It was not very good. And at that point, I realized, like, this is just not going to happen at all. And I just had to leave.
Oh, man.
All the other voice actors were like, oh, well, if Iggy's leaving, then we may as well leave, too, if Iggy doesn't have confidence in it anymore. And the whole thing just fell apart. And I felt awful about it, but it's like, I couldn't just stick around and waste more years of my life waiting for this thing that was definitely not going to happen.
Right, right.
Like, even working at it, like, nonstop, full-time, for 6 years, it would have taken that long to get the animation done. And if it had taken that long to get to even the script, it wasn't going to happen.
Mm.
Not in my lifetime.
Yeah, I think sometimes deciding to turn it down is an important choice and a distinction to make, I think, to a certain degree.
Yeah, I learned a lot from that. And it was the first thing that really gave me confidence and made me want to be a voice actor and feel like it was something I could actually do. But then I also learned a lot about how productions are kind of a mess and how a lot of them don't actually come to fruition. And it was a hard lesson to learn. And it was one that I ended up learning on a lot more productions. Like, I don't want to get down on people because I understand that it comes from a place of love for the project and the passion. And I love that, but it's like, passion is only as good as your discipline to actually finish the thing. There's a lot of follow-through. There's a lot of work.
Right.
And passion can only last for so long before it just gets into the little bits of just actually finishing the thing.
And you also run your own YouTube channel, youtube.com/Iggy and the Ape. Let's start from the name. What's up with the Iggy and the Ape?
It's a long story, and it's kind of dumb. It's I wrote these blog posts that were supposed to be, they were like reviews of random Flash games online, and I made like one offhand joke about how they were written by a gorilla at a typewriter, and I just kind of like metamorphized that into like an actual character that was like existing in the background of the thing. And then I made the YouTube channel at that time, and I was like, well, this is going to be tied into both of those things, so I can make video versions, so I'm going to put these together, so I'll just name it that. And I didn't really do anything regularly on that YouTube for quite a bit after that. Honestly, I've only really started focusing on YouTube that heavily earlier this year. I started doing movie reviews because I just went to movies more often and I really love film. And more recently in November, I started doing Iggy Kids Whiteboard Games, which is like whiteboard board games. They're board game tutorials that are kind of modeled after the like whiteboard explainer videos, but
oh, okay.
I try and make them more entertaining. I use the actual games. I'm pretty happy with them. They're a lot of work, but it's definitely really fulfilling to actually finish something. And I'm excited for the next season of it. I'm coming close to the end of this season. And after that, I'm going to work on planning for the next season and work on other videos that are going to need more research and a bit more time to them. So my output will slow down a bit, but I feel like the content will actually improve for it.
Wow. Well, congratulations on almost wrapping season one. That's great.
Yeah, thank you. I've worked pretty hard, Adam. A lot harder than I thought I'd need to. but I've gotten a decent process, and I think I'll be able to improve on it next time.
Beautiful. Make sure to go, everybody, visit youtube.com/Iggy and the Ape. Iggy Kids Whiteboard Games. A must see for sure. Now, to a certain extent, I personally believe that the equipment that we use and the equipment path that we've upgraded along is a pretty interesting mile markers of our progress. What did you start out with? And what were some of the remarkable and notable equipment that you use along the way? And what are you using now?
Gosh, I made actually a whole vlog about this that's on my channel, where I just go through all the mics that I still have and the ones that I've used in the past. But to go over it quickly, the first time that I ever actually had a microphone that wasn't just built into a computer or something, I had just a $5 Radio Shack mic that I used for podcasting, and it sounded pretty awful. I ended up going after that to a Toshiba headset, which was also awful, not just because it sounded terrible, and with a headset you can't get any kind of decent positioning, so it just sounds terrible, but also because it like looped over your ear and it just was like this sharp plastic and it just sucked after like 5 minutes. So doing a whole podcast wearing that was awful. But then when I wanted to get into voiceover, not professionally, but more seriously, I got an MXL990, which is the mic I'm using now. Not the same MXL990, but the same make and model. And because I didn't have any kind of proper treatment, it obviously sounded awful, but I was pretty happy with it. For a brief time, I had a CAD E100S, which I loved just for the pad. The minus 10 decibel pad is fantastic for loud rolls, because as it is now, I have to record everything but the loud parts, go out of my booth, turn the gain down, come back, test it out until I'm sure the gain is right, and then do the loud part. But with that, I could just do the regular parts, and when it got loud, flick on the switch,
yeah,
drops it by 10 decibels, and I could just scream, and it's fine. Oh, I miss that mic. I ran into some small financial difficulties and had to sell it, but I plan to get another one as soon as... it used to be called MassDrop, but there's a website called Drop, and the idea is that everybody pledges to buy this thing, and then because it's a large order, they can buy it in bulk and get you a better price. Like a Caddy 100S, which is like $600, you can get for like $200, $300 on there.
Wow.
And it's every now and then, you know, they have a bunch of different microphones and stuff, a bunch of audio stuff. They have kitchen. They like have anything you need. So this isn't sponsored or anything. I just really love the service, and I've used it specifically for microphones. And I plan to, once they do another drop for Caddy E100S, get another one, so I can get that pad again. It's so nice.
Any thoughts of moving to LA or New York in the future?
You know, I've considered it. Pretty much everyone in my family loves New York. We're just all like super about the hustle, which you have to have in New York. You can, they make it seem like it's an incomprehensible task, but it's like, if you're willing to hustle, you can make it in New York. Someone who lives there said, not everyone who hustles lives in New York, but everyone who lives in New York has a hustle.
Mm. Oh, that's good.
And it's either you have like multiple jobs and you're working constantly, or you are like out on the street doing something, selling or performing or something. And there's always something you got to be doing. And I love that. And there is some voiceover stuff going on there, but it is really expensive. So I got to make sure that like before going there, I have to be like mentally and emotionally prepared for never being able to stop. I hope to move somewhere that has more of a scene sometime in the future, but it's going to require some planning. I don't want to just jump into it.
Some goals for 2020, personal, professional, both.
I definitely want to build my business more to have more consistent work. It's kind of sporadic now because I've been focusing on personal projects. But I want to definitely plan everything out for season 2 of Whiteboard Games. I want to produce some video essays and things like that on various aspects of board and video game design and about film and such. I have some stuff in the works, so hopefully some of that will be coming out before too long.
What's next for Iggy Kid? What do you have coming up? Where do you go from here in the long run? And if they want to learn more about you, the listeners, and your work, where do they go to find you?
Well, most of my stuff is going to be on the YouTube channel, youtube.com/IggyandTheApe. I post a lot of stuff on Twitter. It's mostly retweets and stuff, but anytime I put out a new video or something, or I'm working on something, I'll talk about it on there. And that's at Iggy D, as in dog, kid. And like I said, I'm going to be working on Whiteboard Games Season 2. I'm going to have a few things in there, like I'm going to probably have Puerto Rico, which is a pretty classic game. I'm going to include Root, which was the new hotness of last year and is my favorite game. The only reason I haven't done now is because I'm waiting on stuff from this last Kickstarter they did to make sure that it's as comprehensive as possible. And maybe if they ship it in time, I might include Oath, which is the new leader game that they're going to start the Kickstarter for tomorrow. They might be able to, if I get that before I start production. But yeah, I'm going to work on that. I'm going to have some video essays. I'm specifically working on a video essay about the anime Orange and how it's about dealing with grief through fantasy. I have another series that I don't want to get into yet because it's a little more politically charged. So until I have it fully formed and well-researched and everything to make sure that I'm coming at it correct, I don't want to talk about it too much and accidentally say something that'll turn people off from it, because I swear it's going to be smart, it's going to be inclusive, it's not going to be leaning to either side necessarily. It's going to be a well-researched, well-thought-out series talking specifically about media and how it works out. So
wow,
people probably get offended still because, you know, politically charged nonsense.
You can't please everybody.
I will do my best to make it smart and not make it seem like it's attacking anybody. Even though it's critical, I'm going to make it clear that I'm not attacking anyone, and I don't think anyone is bad for liking the media that I'm talking about. It's just important when you're watching media that you make sure you analyze the stuff that is maybe not so good and not so cool and recognize that. But that doesn't mean you're bad for liking it. It just means that you should be an intelligent viewer and pay attention to stuff.
Had a little sneak peek and something to think about. That's great. Something to look forward to. Thanks for letting us know that little sneak peek of what's coming up. That's fantastic. Well, thanks for spending some time here with me today. That's great. There was a lot of helpful information and advice and some of the processes and what goes into voice work industry. It was great having you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This was a great time. And I hope to hear more from everybody. I like if, you know, you have any questions or any kind of conversations or anything you want to have, just like reach out to me on Twitter. I love having discussions about voiceover, voice acting, any of the stuff I talk about on my YouTube channel, or really anything. I just love learning and having, you know, talking to people. It's nice to have community.
It's part of what I'm trying to kind of instill with this whole podcast, that community aspect. They can get together and share information together. You know what I mean? All right. Thanks again, Iggy. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too.
This has been Voice Actor Showcase. Visit our website at voiceactorshowcase.com. If you'd like to be featured on this podcast, contact us at voiceactorshowcase.com. Thanks for listening.